We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station if children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parish Show.
I'm here. My name is Gary Parish, speaking to you from Memphis, Tennessee. Bennett Doyle is producing the program. Glad he's with me. Glad you're with me. Hope you're getting through the day best you can.
Her daddy lost most everything on horse, whiskey, and wedding
ring. I hope you were riding with Big Bad Bennett last night on that plus 3.5.
Boom!
With the Brooklyn Nets. I'll be honest, didn't look great
for
a while.
Close call.
Didn't look great for a while. But with a final score of 86-83. 86-83.
Thank you, KD.
It's like a college basketball game. 86-83.
Yeah, it was ugly.
Milwaukee wins. So now it's a 2-1 series. With game 4 scheduled for Milwaukee. And Brooklyn plus 3.5 was a winner. Not the prettiest game in the history of the NBA, but it was close. And exciting at the end. And then we got the nightcap with Donovan Mitchell once again acting like a playoff superstar. So it was a fun night in the NBA. We'll talk about it momentarily. First, though, quickly, let me set this afternoon's schedule for you at 4:20. Dan Walken's going to join me, National Comments, USA Today. Feel sick.
What's that?
By all accounts, one of the greatest tennis matches in the history of the sport is happening right now.
I've been seeing that, yeah.
Chris Evert has called it the greatest tennis match in the history. Andy Roddick said it's one of the best he's ever watched. Nobody I know enjoys tennis more than Dan Walken. So I'm going to have to pull him away from the greatest tennis match ever between Novak Djokovic and Rafael Nadal and ask him to talk about the college football playoff. I'll be quick with him because I'd be mad if like somebody pulled me away from a Mets World Series games. And for him, this is the equivalent of a Mets World Series game. For better or worse, Dan Walken's going to be here at 4:20. When I finish that, I'll take a break, come back, do 4 notable stories at 4:44, at which point I will discuss 4 previously undiscussed stories. Among them, an elite prospect in the class of 2022 has reclassified to 2021. Penny Hardaway's Tigers appear to be involved. I'll tell you about him right around 4:44. Michigan State coach Tom Izzo has talked for the first time about his former player, Keith Appling, and the first-degree murder charge that he is facing. I'll tell you what Tom Izzo said a little later on this hour. Fun pitching matchup tonight at Citi Field in Queens. Jacob deGrom, the greatest pitcher in the world, against Blake Snell, who most famously was pitching in the World Series brilliantly last season until his manager took him out, possibly prematurely. He now plays for the Padres. So it's Padres, Mets, Jacob deGrom, Blake Snell. That's how I'll be spending my Friday night. We'll talk about that just before 5 o'clock. And Alexandra Cooper, do you know Alexandra Cooper, Big Bad Bennett?
No.
She is the host of the Call Her Daddy podcast.
Oh, yeah, I know her.
She is close to cutting a deal exclusively with Spotify to take the Call Her Daddy podcast to Spotify for $20 million.
Good.
This girl had never talked publicly 2 years ago. You want to talk about making me feel bad about my own career? Like, I thought I was doing okay. She started talking 2 years ago. Now she's about to sell her podcast for $20 million. Leave Barstool Sports for Spotify. I'll give you more details on that during 4 notable stories at 4:44. 5 o'clock, Jeff Calkins, just like always. Then I'll eventually do dinner to go. I got a Dateline preview.
Let's go.
I'm going to go ahead and tell you a little bit. Kind of, it's not perfect.
We've been on a good roll, so I figure we're due for a letdown.
One of my favorite things about Dateline previews is that I preview them, and then you try to solve them, and then I tell you, good job, Bennett, and then we talk about it until 6:07 or something.
We've got to work on that.
We've got to work on that. Nobody dies in this Dateline.
Oh, come on.
And there's really not anything to solve. It's just a crazy story.
Okay.
It is a crazy story, though. Plenty to talk about. I can't wait
Okay, good.
I can't wait to preview it and spoil Dateline for you right around 5:45 or so, but there's nothing to solve. So you're going to be able to take this Friday off your detective hat.
Sounds good.
Either way, we'll do a Dateline preview, and then we'll get on out of here. So that's the rundown. We got a lot to get to, but I did want to start with the NBA playoffs. We had a doubleheader last night. It was Game 3, Nets Bucks. Game 2, Clippers Jazz. We'll talk about them in the order that they were played. 86-83, Bucks win it. After jumping to a 21-point lead early in the game, Brooklyn scored 11 points in the first quarter and only 18 in the fourth. This is a historically incredible offense that scored 83 points in a 48-minute basketball game and still only lost by three because the opponent only scored 86. Ugly game, a lot of missed shots. Most of them, it felt like, by the two-time MVP, Giannis Antetokounmpo, who was 1 of 8 from three and 4 of 9 from the free throw line with an airballed free throw.
Man, that's an experience every time he goes to the line.
Whatever he's doing, he has to do something else.
First off, quit taking so long. Because, like, A, I don't want to see you standing at the free throw line for 20 seconds. But B, like, it's not working.
It's not working. You know,
no,
what? Like,
shoot it fast.
Like, what? I don't think a golf instructor would tell an actual, like, good golfer this. But one thing a golf instructor had told an average golfer like me, perhaps even a below average golfer like me, is like, don't stand over the ball forever. Like, you're thinking too much. Mm-hmm. Just stand over the ball, hit the ball. Like, keep this as simple as you can keep it, because when you're trying to think about this, think about that, you're in your head too much. It's not going to work out for you. And obviously different sport, apples to oranges, but I'm assuming if I were talking to Giannis, I would say, just catch the ball, shoot the ball.
Mm-hmm.
You're standing there as a terrible free throw shooter.
Just thinking about it, dribbling.
With the whole world knowing you're a terrible three-point shooter, you cannot be helping yourself by dribbling and dribbling and dribbling.
Right.
And oh, by the way, creating a violation every time, whether they call it or not.
Right.
Did you see in Brooklyn they were running a clock on the scoreboard, and he was going past it the 10 seconds every time.
Mm-hmm.
And they call it every once in a while, but not consistently. So, yeah, I don't know what's going on there. I mean, you're a professional basketball player. Like, you shouldn't be airballing free throws.
No.
Like, I wouldn't airball a free throw. If you put me on a free throw line right now, I wouldn't airball a free throw.
I don't think I would either, no.
So what is this guy doing?
Yeah, he's definitely in his head with that.
And taking 8 three-pointers? Just because they're giving them to you doesn't mean you ought to be taking them. You missed 7 of the 8, and it is wild watching him play against this Brooklyn team because they won't even come past the free throw line, and they're just saying shoot the ball or drive into us, and he is actually backing up and getting a full like head of steam and just driving aggressively at the rim, and he was awesome in the first quarter doing that. It was one dunk after another, and that's how Milwaukee jumped to a big lead. But then KD got going a little bit, went nose-to-nose with P.J. Tucker. I thought we was about to have a Texas versus Texas fist fight.
Did you see you saw the security run into P.J. Tucker?
Yes.
So they came out. That was KD's personal security guard.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they came out and ran into him. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Well, that can't be okay to have your personal security guards running onto the court. So KD and P.J. Tucker went nose-to-nose. And then, of course, KD missed a long three, contested, awkward, tough, it's wild that he came as close to making it as he did type of three. And so Milwaukee wins 86-83. You think we got a series now, or Milwaukee took advantage of a terrible Brooklyn performance, won it by 3 at home, no big deal?
I think Milwaukee took advantage of a terrible Brooklyn performance.
That's what I think, too. I wouldn't be surprised if Brooklyn wins this thing in five.
Me either. I really didn't take anything from it. Like, KD is not going to go such a long stretch like he did last night. I mean, he still finished with, like, 30 points in the game, and he didn't have a good game.
No.
By his account.
No,
so.
It was 30 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals, but he was only 11 of 28 from the field.
Yeah, so, I mean, he's not going to go such a long stretch again. Not playing good.
I wouldn't think so.
Plus, they could get James Harden back.
At some point, they get James Harden back. I still think Brooklyn wins this series probably pretty easily and perhaps in 5 games. But if Brooklyn would have won last night, then you don't even need to watch that anymore.
Right.
It's not even interesting anymore. At least this makes Game 4, which is going to be played on Sunday afternoon on ABC, at least this makes Game 4 interesting, like worth your time. And Brooklyn opened, by the way, as a 1-point favorite on the road in this game. But if they'd have gone, there's obviously massive difference between a 3-0 series and a 2-1 series, even if I still think the 2-1 series is going to end in a lopsided way. So, again, wasn't the prettiest game in the world, but it was fun. I enjoy watching. Like, as I was watching it, I was recognizing all of the missed shots in the bad offense and the lack of points, and yet never felt bored. You can acknowledge, I think, it's an ugly game. Nobody's making shots.
Mm-hmm.
But also go, but it's kind of fun. You've got a almost fight between two Texas alums. You with a security guard running on the court. You've got Giannis playing aggressively, in parts looking great, in other parts looking terrible. And then in the final minutes, you know, we're in a one-possession game. Like, enjoyable experience,
yep.
Even if it only finished with 169 points. So then that game finishes. We go to Game 2, Utah and the Clippers. And, boy, Donovan Mitchell did it again.
Mm-hmm.
37 points. He was 15 of 29 from the field, 6 of 12 from three-point range. 37 points, 4 assists, 3 rebounds, and in a game with Kawhi Leonard and in a game with Paul George, you can reasonably say for the second straight game, he was the best player on the court. And that is not the way he's been described throughout most of his career. Which brings me back to a TNT game in January. We talked about this earlier in the week. Utah was playing a TNT game, so Charles, Kenny, Shaq, and Ernie were in studio. And for a lot of these games early in the season, TNT would not have a sideline reporter because they weren't traveling to games and you couldn't get them on the court anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So the way it would work, and the way it still sometimes works, is that there's somebody there with public relations who grabs somebody and says, hey, put on the headset. You're going to talk to Charles and Kenny and Ernie and Shaq. And on this night, it was Donovan Mitchell because Utah won, and Donovan Mitchell was really, really good. And at halftime of this game and in advance of this game, the TNT guys have been talking about Utah and whether they're for real because they had gotten off to a nice start. And of course, they go on to secure the one seed in the West. And the conversation was about Donovan Mitchell. And Shaq basically said, talented young guy, but I don't think he's got what it takes to take it to the next level. And that's a perfectly reasonable opinion. Seems obviously wrong at this point. But in the moment, if you want to say, listen, there's the Damian Lillard, Steph Curry class of guards. And then there's a step down, and that's where Donovan Mitchell is. And don't try to put Donovan Mitchell with those guys. If you want to hold that opinion in January, whatever. Seems inaccurate today, but in January, maybe it's a reasonable opinion to have. Something that you could reasonably say on television. But what was weird is they bring Donovan Mitchell on after the game, after a win, after a nice performance, because you don't even put the headset on if you didn't win and have a nice performance. Mm-hmm. And Shaq decides to say this about Donovan Mitchell to Donovan Mitchell, I guess technically not right to his face, but while they are talking to each other on national television. Here's how it sounded.
Father, this is Shaq. I said tonight that you are one of my favorite players, but you don't have what it takes to get to the next level. I said it on purpose. I wanted you to hear it. What do you have to say about that?
All right. That's it.
That's it?
That's it.
Okay, cool.
I've been hearing that since my rookie year. You know, I'm just going to get better and do what I do.
Good.
At the end of the day.
Well, that's what I wanted to hear you say.
Yes,
love
sir.
Your game, brother. Keep it up.
Appreciate it.
Just a weird thing to say.
It was so awkward.
It's just.
And I love Shaq, but that was dumb.
It was just, it's not only dumb, though. Weird and wildly inappropriate. Like, imagine me as a sideline reporter on some game. I'm at Seton Hall Marquette, which is a game I did a couple of years ago. And Seton Hall won the game. And imagine I'm doing a post-game interview with Kevin Willard. And he's the coach at Seton Hall. And they won by 14, and I'm just making this up. And they were first in the Big East standings after this victory. And they were ranked 8th in the country. And it's a sold-out Prudential Center, and it's just everything is exactly as you want it to be. You never had a better moment if you're Kevin Willard and Seton Hall than you're having right now. And they're like, all right, let's go down to Gary, who's got Coach Kevin Willard. Gary. I say, thanks, guys. Kevin, you know, I've written about it before. You guys are ranked in the top 10. You're now first place in the Big East standings, but I just don't think you've got what it takes to actually guide a team to a Big East championship. What do you think about that? What? Who would do that?
No one.
It's just, no matter what I think of Kevin Willard or Seton Hall in that moment, is not the time to bring it up. You talk about the win, you congratulate them, you move on. So I was watching live that night when Shaq did that, and I was like, what a weird moment. And I have no idea if Donovan Mitchell has kept that in his back pocket, if he's motivated by that. I would be interested to hear somebody ask him if he remembers that night and what he thinks about it. But, woo boy, it seems pretty clear at this point he has what it takes to take it to the next level.
Yeah, I mean, I still think they're going to win the title.
He's got 345 playoff games in his career now. That's more than Steph Curry. He's only 24 years old. And he had 37 last night to lift Utah to a 117-111 victory over the Clippers, a Utah team that was once again without Mike Conley. I don't know if Utah's going to win the title, but I know they're good enough to win the title.
Yeah, and I did just see Mike is traveling with them to L.A., so that would maybe indicate that he's closer to playing.
You know, I hope. You know, James Harden did travel to Milwaukee, but did not play. So, as always, we'll see. But another incredible performance from Donovan Mitchell last night, and now his Utah Jazz are up 2-0, largely because, despite what Shaquille O'Neal said several months ago, he is a young man playing at an extremely high level and looks like he's capable of taking this to the absolute peak of the sport. Dan Wilkins up next.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Stretch my hands to you.
Life like this is what your life like. Try to live the life right.
Class of 2022 basketball prospect is reclassifying to 2021. That means he's going to play college basketball next season somewhere. And the University of Memphis appears to be involved. We'll get into that in the next segment. Jeff Calkins will be here at 5 o'clock. But right now, he's a national columnist, USA Today. Dan Wilkin making the big interview.
Award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parish Show Big Interview. Presented by Fleming's Prime Steakhouse and Wine Bar. Using food and wine to create memorable times.
I'm so glad that tennis match is over because I would have felt sick pulling you away from it.
Oh, it would have been fine. I mean, it was a little bit this way. That match was going on. It was going to go on for another hour, so it wouldn't have been a big deal.
To catch everybody up, a French Open semifinal, Novak Djokovic defeats Rafael Nadal 3-6, 6-3, 7-6, 6-2 to advance to the finals. And this is wild to me. I mean, I know everybody who follows the sport closely understands this. It's probably a big bullet point statistic that everybody knows. But Nadal's now only lost three times ever at the French Open. That's crazy.
Yeah, he's won 13 French Opens, and he was going for number 14 this year, which, to put that in perspective, Pete Sampras, who had the Grand Slam all-time record before Federer came along, he won 14 Grand Slams in his career total. So Nadal was trying to tie Pete Sampras just on the French Open, which is just wild to think about. But, yeah, he lost in 2009 to Robin Soderling, which opened the door for Federer to win that French Open, his only French Open. And then he lost once to Djokovic, and now he's lost the second time to Djokovic. So very monumental moment for the sport, incredible match. Djokovic was unbelievable.
I saw Chrissy Everett tweet that it was the greatest tennis match ever. Is that hyperbole or something close to maybe true?
Well, I think through the first three sets, you certainly could have made an argument that it was trending that way. Most people in tennis regard the Federer-Nadal 2008 Wimbledon final, which Nadal won, as the greatest tennis match ever played. You could also find some others in the conversation, maybe some, you know, a Borg-McEnroe Wimbledon or something like that. There's been others in there, but this was in the conversation through the first three sets. I think Djokovic running away with the fourth set probably takes it a notch below. I think you got to have a five-setter to be in that conversation.
As I'm talking, I'm just sort of, I don't know, my brain is in tennis, and I mentioned Chris Everett. And from my childhood, one of the most famous tennis players in the world, certainly in America, was Jennifer Capriati, and I haven't thought of her name in probably 10 years. Do you have any idea what she, like, does now?
From what I've heard, she's not doing that well.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you know, I mean, she obviously had a really, like, difficult situation because she was on the pro tennis tour at like 13 years old.
Right.
She was making, you know, the U.S. Open semifinals, I think, at like 13 or 14 years old. And, you know, and obviously there was a lot of things that went along with that. And she got messed up in drugs and all kinds of stuff. And then she made this incredible comeback, you know, in her 20s, and she won a couple Grand Slams, and then she's kind of disappeared. And I actually heard a podcast the other day, randomly enough, where she got brought up, and The thought was that she's not in a great place at this point in her life.
Well, that's too bad.
Too bad.
Yeah, I hate to hear that because like she was, I mean, I actually like followed tennis pretty closely like as a teenager, and so you're talking about Sampras, Agassi, you know, Michael Chang, I guess, Jim Courier, and then like Capriati was a big deal.
Yeah, she was, and in fact they changed a lot of the rules around how young you can be to play that tour because of her, because of some of the pitfalls. And there were others, too, like before her, you know, Andrea Jaeger making Wimbledon finals super young. Like, there were others on the women's side, but the Capriati story kind of turned into a cautionary tale, which is why, for instance, like when Coco Gauff kind of burst onto the scene at Wimbledon 2 years ago, she couldn't join the pro tour full-time. They limited how much she could be out there. And they try to do that to protect people from themselves, to be honest.
That's interesting. I'm talking to Dan Wolkin from USA Today. Let's switch to college football. Big news yesterday. A proposal is official for a 12-team playoff. We'll talk about the specifics of it in a second, but just broadly speaking, your thoughts on what this proposal looks like.
Well, I think from a competitive standpoint, I think everything about it is pretty sound. I mean, I have some criticisms around the edges of it. You know, I think it still is ridiculous that they are in bed with the bowl system to the degree they are and all of that. But 12 teams, like, sure, why not? You know, I think there was a great stat this morning I saw from Max Olson, who works for The Athletic, and he basically looked at a 10-year window under this system. And what he surmised was that over a decade, 44 teams – different schools would have been in the playoff, which is about a third of FBS. And that feels about right to me. Like, if you're going to have a playoff, you want it to not only, you know, reward the best seasons, but have an opportunity for schools that have historic seasons for them to be part of this thing and feel like they really accomplished something. Memphis would have been in two years ago. This past year, Indiana would have been in. Indiana, of all schools. Iowa State would have been in. And, I think that's a good number of – I think it makes it hard to get to. You have to be in that elite group of teams for that particular year to get in still. You've got to be basically a top 10 team. But it doesn't make it so far away that like it feels now, because you've just got the same – Clemson, Alabama, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Notre Dame over and over and over again.
They haven't committed to a start time. What's your best guess on what year we actually watch this for the first time?
I mean, I think we'll see it in 2023. I think they'll go through the 21 season and the 22 season, and they've committed to that. But they'll start, once they announce this, and they'll announce it, sometime this summer.
I'm talking to Dan Walken here on 92.9 FM ESPN. You mentioned that
I was hearing myself there. Sorry, Gary.
Yeah, it's okay. You went out. I thought maybe you just stopped short. Either way, we're cool. Let me ask you this. So you say they're in bed with the bowl systems, and that's clearly true because they're going to take the quarterfinals to bowls. Why haven't we reached the point where they can just say, we needed each other once upon a time, but we don't need you anymore?
Well, I think part of it is cronyism, for sure. Part of it is these guys in the bowl system have been around college football for a long time. They have figured out a way to
Something was happening with the phone. I'm not sure what, but he went out for the second time. For people who don't understand what we're talking about, what most who follow the sport wanted this playoff to look like is that, sure, in the first round, the higher-seeded team gets to host the game, but also in the quarterfinals, the higher-seeded team gets to host the game in its home stadium. That way, say, if Alabama is the number one seed, when Alabama plays its quarterfinal game against presumably the 8th seed, that game would be played in Tuscaloosa. As it is being proposed, that game would now be played in some bowl game somewhere, a neutral site, as opposed to in Tuscaloosa, which means first round teams that have to play in the first round, four of them will get to host games. But if you're a top four seed in this 12-team playoff, you will never actually host a playoff game. Do we got Dan again?
Let me just jump in on this, GP,
sure.
Because here's where I'm disappointed in it, because these stadiums, aside from the Rose Bowl, and the Rose Bowl I kind of put in its own category because it is a destination. It is a historic college football venue. But the rest of these stadiums, whether it's the Superdome in New Orleans or Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta or the Hard Rock Cafe Stadium in Florida, they're pro stadiums. They're kind of antiseptic, cookie-cutter pro stadiums. They're not college football places. And the atmosphere in them kind of feels a little bit off. It's not what you would get at a Bryant-Denny Stadium or at Auburn or at Michigan or a place like that. And I'm disappointed that you're not going to get quarterfinals in those places, at least, because I think that would be better for the sport. But understand that these people who run the bowl games have burrowed themselves into this system for a long time, not just because of cronyism, which is certainly part of it, but because of money. This gives the college football playoff an opportunity to put those quarterfinal games out for bid, lock in the contracts, and I'm sure they're going to make a ton of money because somebody in Atlanta or Indianapolis or Dallas or Houston is going to pay big money to secure those quarterfinal games.
If you're Greg Sankey, do you push against this? Because you are setting up a scenario where Alabama might never host a playoff game, and though I understand being able to sell these games off to bowls is profitable, but for the University of Alabama, which is your biggest football brand, having that game in Tuscaloosa is incredibly profitable for the school and also the community.
I think that the way they look at it is that the SEC, no matter where they play the games, they're going to have great fan support and people traveling probably more so than from most schools to these games. And that what they don't want is a situation like would have happened last season if you had this system where Cincinnati would have hosted Georgia in a playoff game. And Georgia would have had to go play in 30-degree weather in Cincinnati in a first-round playoff game. I think they would rather avoid that than to have, you know, more opportunities to host. That's just my opinion.
Another little twist in this is that the top four seeds have to be conference champions, which means by definition Notre Dame can never be a top four seed. Were you surprised Notre Dame agreed to that?
I was at the very outset, but when I thought through it, I think it makes a lot of sense. And the reason is because this system will give Notre Dame way more access to the playoff than they would have had. Like, I'm not saying that Notre Dame is going to be in every year, but I think Notre Dame, by the way they build their schedule, if they have a good team, they're going to have an opportunity to be in the top 10, in that top 12 most years. And what they've done here is by agreeing to this system, as opposed to, say, eight, if it was eight, they'd have a harder time getting in the playoff. But if they're number five or number six or even number seven, let's just say, they're hosting a first-round game in South Bend. And the kind of team that you would play, you're playing a team that's you know, you're better than at home. And that, to me, does not really make for a huge impediment if they have a team good enough to win a national championship. Like, it's a game that Notre Dame should win if they're good enough. I think even with the fact that they're not going to get a bye, their biggest obstacle to winning a national championship is not that first-round game. It's winning that game and then playing Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson, same as it ever was.
Wrapping up here with Dan Wolkin from USA Today. I opened the show talking about last night's two playoff games, the first of which was Milwaukee's 86-83 victory over Brooklyn. Last night I saw you tweeted that wasn't as much of a win for Milwaukee as a stay of execution. I think you and I are on the same page here. Like, it makes the series more interesting, I guess, but I haven't seen anything that makes me think Brooklyn's not advancing past Milwaukee and Giannis. Does this look like a five-game series to you?
Yeah, that did not look like that game turns the tide of the series, and now Milwaukee's going to get back in it and build momentum. That looked like hanging on for dear life. Brooklyn's still the better team. Brooklyn stupidly had, you know, some possessions down the stretch. Like, Bruce Brown kind of lost his mind. So that's what it looked like to me. But, you know, game four, like, if Milwaukee comes out and plays their best game of the series, then the pressure shifts back to Brooklyn. But I'm actually headed down to get a little taste of playoff basketball here in a couple hours down at the State Farm Arena. So this is the first time I've been to an NBA game in quite a while.
Oh, that'll be terrific. So that obviously is Sixers-Hawks. Philadelphia, 1.5-point favorite on the road. Series is tied 1-1. This does seem like a series that could go six or seven games. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think it could. It unfortunately for Atlanta, they had a pretty big blow when the other day DeAndre Hunter was declared out for the season. He's got to have meniscus surgery, and he was, like, really good in the New York series. He's a terrific player. Like, he's going to be a franchise cornerstone for them, and you just don't have, like, he's just such a big person. Like, he's a huge guy and so effective defensively. He can create his own offense because he can just shoot over smaller people, and he moves laterally so well. Like, that's a big blow because, you know, I don't know now what they're going to do, but you have to juggle your lineup in a way that exposes more, you know, Solomon Hill minutes and more Tony Snell minutes. And against a team like Philadelphia, that's tough. So I think, you know, the Hawks, certainly I'd feel better about their chances if they had Hunter. At the same time, like, I thought the way the first two games went, like, it didn't feel in game two to me like they got their head handed to them. It felt to me like they got in position to potentially win that game, And then Shake Milton went crazy for 3 minutes, and that was that. So we'll see what tonight brings. It's going to be an impressive atmosphere, but obviously Atlanta's got to win to, you know, keep that series under control in some to some degree.
That is Dan Walken. You can read him at usatoday.com. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Dan Walken. Have fun tonight. Have a good weekend. We'll catch up next week.
All right, man. See you.
Thanks, brother. That's Dan Walken from USA Today. When we come back, Class 2022 Basketball Prospect has reclassified to 2021, and it appears Penny Hardaway and the Tigers are involved. We'll get into that next. You're listening. It's the Gary Parrish Show, run 92.9 FM ESPN.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now, back to the Gary Parrish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
The God Killer, this Tokyo and I'm Godzilla. Playing blackjack versus death gun on the car dealer. Just bought a demon, I'm screaming about the car dealer. The last temptation of Mike, but I'm a God digger. Tell me as a bob that the God don't need a job. And if I did, the oligarchs would be missing, murdered, and raw. This is Bonaparte that he paid with Tucson. And they went on a world conquest, tearing your Bonaparte.
New Amsterdam Vodka is a premium 80-proof vodka made from the finest quality grains. 5 times distilled for unparalleled smoothness. Filter 3 times to create a soft finish, as I'm sure you know by now. It is so smooth you can drink it straight. And I promise it is what I buy when I'm inside the liquor store. And that's because it's a quality vodka that's reasonably priced. How reasonably priced? You can get the big bottles for less than $20 at most liquor stores in the area. It makes no sense to spend extra money on any other brand. New Amsterdam Vodka is the best value you can find when you're looking for a quality vodka to enjoy in these warm months. Woo boy, warm out there today. I went to hit golf balls for an hour, and I thought I was going to die.
Yeah, it's muggy.
I thought I was going to die. If you're into flavored vodkas, New Amsterdam offers a variety. Watermelon, lemon, raspberry, orange, red berry, peach, pineapple, coconut. The list is long. And don't forget, New Amsterdam also has a gluten-free vodka. So if you're on a gluten-free diet, that's the vodka for you. Please ask for it by name. Next time you're in a bar, restaurant, or liquor store. New Amsterdam Vodka. Pour your soul out on the web. NewAmsterdamSpirits.com. Jeff Coggan's going to join me a little after 5 o'clock. We'll talk extensively about Dateline. I'm going to leave us some time today, Big Bet Bennett. Around 5:43 or something like that. I need time.
Yeah.
I need time to talk about Dateline before I get out of here. But right now, there's 4 stories I'd like to discuss.
4 notable stories at 4:44. Gary tends to lose focus, start telling stories, and forget what he wanted to talk about at certain points every afternoon. So we've developed a device that ensures he'll touch on important things you need to know each day at this time. This is GP's 4 notable stories at 4:44. Story number one.
Jalen Duran, who is the number 2 ranked prospect in the class of 2022, is now expected to reclassify to 2021 and play college basketball next season. So this is a big development in the world of amateur basketball if he actually plays college basketball. Everything that is being reported says that that is his plan right now, to play college basketball. But it is also being reported that the NBA G League and the Australian National Basketball League are both offering more than $1 million for him to play with them next season. So do you take $1 million and go to either Australia or in the G League Ignite program, or do you play college basketball? That is the decision Jalen Duren's going to have to make. But if he does play college basketball, he recently cut his list to Kentucky, Villanova, Michigan, Miami, Auburn, Alabama, UCLA, Penn State, and Memphis.
Okay.
Dude, that's not cutting your list.
No, it's not like every good school.
Cut your list, all right?
Yeah, come on.
There's no scenario where you're actually considering all of those schools.
No.
Like, I just had a son go through the college application slash pick a school, you know, part of his life. And he was considering multiple schools, but, like, he basically knew he's either going here, here, or here. It wasn't 11. What are we doing? This is not a cut list.
No. I think maybe, like, 3 to 5 is possibly a cut list.
I genuinely don't believe that there's any elite basketball prospect who needs more than 5 schools to consider. Anything more than that, you're just, A, hesitant about telling a coach, I'm not coming with you, and putting it off as long as possible. And I know some players feel that way sometimes. Like, I don't want to, you know, known the coach for a while. He's been recruiting me real hard. I like the guy. I don't want to tell him he's out. But you know what the coach will tell me? Just tell me I'm out.
Tell me. I got work to do.
Yeah, like, I don't want to be dragged on in something that I don't need to be involved in. You know, once upon a time, I spoke at a – this was probably 15 years ago by now. I spoke at a coaching clinic down in Gainesville. Billy Donovan was having a coaching clinic, and he asked me to speak about, you know, media stuff. And I said, of course. So went down. It probably wasn't 50, probably 10 years ago. And like Brad Stevens spoke, and it was great. I was thrilled to just be there. But one of the other speakers that Billy got was a guy who big companies bring in to talk to their salespeople. And Billy had seen the guy somewhere speak and thought that it related perfectly to recruiting. And so Billy said, hey, well, I want you to come speak at my coaching clinic because I think some of these things line up pretty well. And the first thing the guy said when he got on stage, he said, okay, I'm going to ask you guys a question. He's talking to, like, Jamie Dixon, Brad Stevens. Like, I don't remember everybody was there, but it was like, you know, 50 college coaches. He said, how many of you have ever, like he said, everybody raise your hand right now. Everybody raise their hand. He said, how many of you have ever gotten a recruit that when you first started recruiting them, you said, this is going to be hard. I'm probably on the outside looking in. If you haven't, drop your hand. And if there are 50 people there, 40 of the hands dropped. And he said, that's the thing you have to remember. You don't usually surprise yourself. If you don't think you're going to get somebody, you're probably not going to get them. So know when to get out of it. Don't waste your time. Mm-hmm. Go get the guys you can get, and don't waste your time finishing second or third or fourth for the guys you can't get. And so I promise you, whether it's Jim Larrañaga, Bruce Pearl, Nate Oates, or Penny Hardaway, they don't want Jalen Duren just keeping them on a list if he knows he's already doing something else, because you're wasting everybody's time. If I'm out, tell me I'm out. You won't hurt my feelings. I'll say thank you, because I won't have to spend another second Zoom calling with you, sitting in a gym watching you, so on and so forth. So, again, at this moment, he's officially considering Kentucky, Villanova, Michigan, Miami, Auburn, Alabama, UCLA, Penn State, Memphis, 9 schools. I promise you, only 3 of those schools got a shot. I don't know which 3, but I promise you only 3 of those schools got a shot.
Yeah.
He knows what he likes and what he doesn't like. Obviously, Kentucky is the biggest name there. You know, they have a long track record with one-and-dones, especially one-and-done bigs. He is a big. So if he goes to college, that might end up being the team to beat. But, again, G League and Australia are both reportedly offering more than $1 million, so this could be a player who never actually steps foot on a college campus. Either way, he is planning to play on the grassroots circuit this summer, so I will see him, as long as his plans don't change, next month at Peach Jam.
Story number 2.
Former Michigan State basketball star Keith Appling was ordered today to remain in jail during his first court appearance on murder and other charges in Detroit. His lawyer had asked for a bail, and the judge was like, he's charged with first-degree murder, so we're not letting him out. And so he will remain in jail. And it's just wild. He's 29 years old. He's the captain of a Michigan State basketball team. And for a few years now, it's been one troubling thing after another. And he has been now in custody since May 24th, when he shot a man and killed a man. At least that's what he's accused of. and there appears to have been witnesses, and like, this ain't, you ain't beating this one.
Mm-hmm.
And so Tom Izzo had not spoken on this at all, but he did provide a quote to the Associated Press earlier today, and it's pretty straightforward. It's simple. Tom said, "It's sad. I'm thinking about him. I feel bad about him. It's a shame what's happened." And it must really be weird, you know, if you're Tom Izzo or any coach who watches a former player, particularly like somebody you cared about, go through something like this. Because think about it. You probably meet this person for the first time when they're 15, 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And then you talk to them as often as you can talk to them and bring them on your campus to your home on recruiting visits. And then they actually pick you. And then they spend 4 years with you in the gym every day. You appreciate them so much that you make them the captain of your basketball team.
Yeah.
And then 6, 7 years after leaving you, they're facing a first-degree murder charge. And again, this isn't just out of nowhere. He has been in trouble consistently with the law over the past couple of years. So, you know, that must just, again, I guess the first word Tom said makes a lot of sense to me. It's sad, because it would probably make you sad if you knew that person when they were a different person. You knew that person when the idea that they'd one day be charged with first-degree murder wasn't even on anybody's radar. Like, what happened between the time he left you and this moment where he pulled this trigger to put him in the spot that he's in now? You know, I'll let other people figure it out, but a lot of stuff had to have happened, because that is a life that was on a good path and then took a wild turn.
Story number 3.
Fun pitching matchup tonight, Citi Field in Queens. Blake Snell, who most famously got pulled arguably early from a World Series game last year by his manager in Tampa Bay, be on the mound for the Padres. And on the other side, for the home team Mets, the greatest pitcher in the world, Jacob DeGrom. The storyline, of course, is that DeGrom has a 0.62 ERA through 9 starts. It is literally the best ERA through 9 starts of any pitcher in the history of baseball. I don't care who you love. Bob Gibson, Sandy Koufax, Clayton Kershaw, Pedro Martinez, Greg Matt. Ain't nobody ever done what this dude is doing right now. And so I know NBA playoff games are on tonight, and I'll be watching them as well. But, you know, we had Joe Sheehan on earlier in the week. And Joe, who ain't the type to get caught up in the moment, said that you could make a reasonable argument that nobody in the history of the sport has ever pitched as well and been as overwhelming as Jacob DeGrom is pitching right now. And so you don't get to see stuff like this very often. So, you know, you got to have the MLB ticket to watch it, because, you know, it'll be under that package. This is not on true national television. But if you want to watch the best pitcher in the world, and somebody who is, according to smart baseball people, pitching as well as anybody has ever pitched in the history of the sport, well, he's going to take the mound tonight a little after 6:10.
Story number 4.
What a story from the Wall Street Journal. Alexandra Cooper, who is the host of the Call Her Daddy podcast, is close to reaching a deal to exclusively take Call Her Daddy to Spotify for $20 million.
That's crazy. That is...
No, it is actually bananas. Incredible. Like, for people who don't know the background, so Alexandra Cooper was like a college soccer player. She's an attractive young woman.
Mm-hmm.
That goes without saying. If you could Google her. She's an attractive young woman. She used to date Noah Syndergaard, by the way.
I knew that. Yep.
She used to date Noah Syndergaard, who pitches for the Mets, or at least used to. He's hurt all the time now.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.